So I want to share a little bit tonight about a really interesting area of our practice, and the Vedanas, and I'll explain out what that is. And, you know, as many of you noticed in our practice, that most of what goes on is in our minds and our hearts, not our bodies. You know, that's where we do the work. And that's why in the last three of the four foundations of mindfulness are about aspects of mind and heart, while the first is only about body. And just to refresh, for those of you who haven't been around in the last two times, we're in the midst of a five-part series. I think it's going to be five parts on the four foundations. And that's the essential instructions that the Buddha gave in how to do mindfulness practice, how to do insight meditation. And they're in the Satipatthana Sutta, which is number 10 in the Majjhima Nikaya, middle-length discourses. And the four are body, Vedanas, mind states, and dhammas. So in the first session, we kind of explored the preamble and the refrain of this sutta, and also kind of the promise at the end. In the second session, we explored body. So here we are. And I've tried to do this in a way that it kind of works, no matter if you just show up one time. It kind of works. You know, you don't have to do all five. So that's the idea. It's all kind of holographic. And as we kind of work into this practice, part of what, one of the interesting things, mysterious things, is that most of the time in our lives, we don't even notice the factors that the Buddha is suggesting we be mindful of. You know, we're not aware they're happening. They're running in the background. That is what's so powerful about what he taught. And that's challenging because, you know, even this body thing, it's hard to maintain consistent mindfulness of that, even though it's as apparent, you know, as the nose on our face. It's right there, got a body. So to try to be mindful of something you forget about much of the time is really challenging, but very fruitful. So what the Buddha did is he pointed them out. And when you study, you know, I definitely suggest any or all of you study the Satipatthana Sutta and whatever. There's multiple books, great book by Analaya, great book by Joseph Goldstein, a 46 lecture series by Joseph Goldstein on Dharma Seed, if you're interested. But the Buddha, what's amazing is the Buddha pointed these out. And that's really, it's just a fascinating thing to try to understand why he pointed them out and what difference it makes to be mindful of these things that we otherwise would miss. And this is important because in terms of responding to phenomena, which often means being wise and kind, responding as opposed to reacting, that the very things that we don't notice are the very things that make us react unless we're mindful of them. So this really goes deep in terms of how we are with each other and how we are with ourselves. And the more we can be mindful of these hidden factors, the more we can really deepen our wisdom and have penetrative insight about what the nature of reality is. So today, we're going to be exploring this almost seemingly ridiculously simple and very important second foundation. And the Pali word is Vedanas, which is one of these Pali terms that's so rich and multi-layered, to try to put it into English, it just doesn't work. But we'll try to describe what it means, and then we'll keep using Vedanas. And so Vedanas has to do with our immediate response to contact with phenomena, whether or not we experience that as pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Just what's our perception of it? It's as simple as that. And, you know, that's what reptiles do. They go towards pleasant, they avoid unpleasant. And that's on our reptilian nature. That's what we do much of the time, which is precisely why to cultivate awareness of these things rather than be on autopilot is immensely significant. I mean, if you look at it a certain way, pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral just drives human history from the simplest things that people do in home life to wars between empires. You know, it gets right down to that, basically, what people decide to do. And this term vagueness is so important in the Buddhist teachings. They show up on three very different lists. And that's kind of how we're going to explore it this time, because the other two lists are the five skandhas and the 12 links of dependent origination. And there's a way in which the way it's presented in those two helps us see what it means in the second foundation of mindfulness. So let's take a look in terms of the five skandhas. And as some of you may know, skandhas, that's Sanskrit, khandhas in Pali, that's the five factors of our experience from which we build a sense of self. It's where the Buddha showed us, you know, this all the way, all this selfing, it really comes down to these five factors and how we relate to them. And it's sequential. Starts with the body and gets subtler. So vagueness, the position is actually important here. It's the second one. It's after body and before perception. And then the last two are mental formations and consciousness, which are getting subtler. But thinking in terms of this, just focusing on the vagueness part and thinking in terms of sequentiality. What's going on? Here is someone talking, I think.
Susan needs to be muted, I
think. Okay, thank you. There you go. Thank you. So look at what's happening. First, there's body. You know, this core essential experience of ourselves as physical. And sometimes that's all we think we are, is a body. You know, just this root experience of body. But next, this body contacts phenomena through the six sense doors. And we have experience. There's just raw contact. And then we respond to that before we know what it is as pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. And we gain a sense of self just from this response. Just we identify with our sense of something being pleasant or not. That's part of how we build a sense of self. And the third one's perception, where we add a name to it. So it's kind of like, you know, that's a Ferrari. I want one. Kind of labeled it. And then we have a sense of what it is that seems pleasant. But sticking with the second, vagueness, you can see how we build a sense of self from that. And that's really important because this sense of self is this bugaboo that trips us up all the time. I was thinking about this on the 4th of July, watching our dog Annie hating the noise of fireworks. She was having such a hard time. And it was all about unpleasant. And you could see the vagueness operating. She was very concretized in her disliking of what was going on. And she didn't get the perception. I mean, she doesn't know whether it's gunfire or explosions or thunder or fireworks. She had no idea, but she just didn't like it. It was unpleasant. And she was very engaged in trying to find a way for it to not be so unpleasant, which mostly meant being squashed up against my wife, Ellen, as much as she possibly could be. But I learned a lot from that because we're kind of like that, you know, in this part of how we are. And you can see how it's just like, I feel pain. I want to leave. I need safety. I need to hide. I. You know, it really concretizes it. So this really informs our experience of vagueness as an object of mindfulness when we're doing our mindfulness practice. Because when we're often lost in when pleasant or unpleasant arises, we're lost. We don't realize how much sense of self arises around that. And the more we can be mindful of it, it can help us not get stuck there. And so looking at how it is in the skandhas can help us understand how powerful it is in that arena, how much it concretizes self. It's a really useful way to work with it and to have, you know, understanding of what's going on. You know, we form a sense of self like a reptile or a dog. We try to get good experience. We try to avoid unpleasant experience. And, you know, sometimes, you know, our brothers and sisters and brothers who are stuck with substance abuse issues, you know, you can see that. I mean, I've had some relatives and people close to me, and, you know, to have the unpleasant, to have the pleasant, to avoid the unpleasant, there's this fierce sense of ire around that. And but we're all kind of like that. It just pops out more just for that reason. But as we cultivate mindfulness, you know, it's a real miracle. I mean, as people were talking about it, it's so relevant that pretty much what everybody talked about was aspects of this. To be able to be in an experience of unpleasant and not react and not think it's us, and just to be free in the middle of it is amazing. It sounds so simple, but it's really, really, really powerful. So you can see how this, the skandhas helps illuminate what's going on in the second foundation of mindfulness, helps us understand what it's about. And now let's take a little look at the second major reference. There's three of them in the list, all the Buddha's lists. Vedana shows up three times. And this is as the seventh of the 12 links of dependent origination. And I'm not going to go into the richness of the 12 links, but what that is the Buddha's sequential understanding of the various steps that keep us trapped in samsara. And if you reverse it, then it's steps that can untrap us from samsara. So in terms of what we're talking about, the Vedanas, which is number seven, again, the sequencing is really relevant and in a different way. And then, and actually this, in terms of the 12, you know, it's kind of this big complex thing. But actually the area that we're, that this brings us to is actually the most important part of the 12 anyway. And the sixth link is contact. Similar to the other thing, we come in contact, we have sensory experience, we come in contact with phenomena. And then the seventh is pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. You know, what's our response? Our reptilian, I like it, I don't like it. Just that thing that happens in a nanosecond. That's just the experience. In the eighth link is a critical one, because from pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral comes craving, tana, which is better translated as thirst. But that's what drives it, you know? We like it, we want it. We don't like it, we want to go away. That's how we react. So this puts another, kind of like it opens another window in what's going on in this fourth foundation, to just realize how powerful this is. You know, it's contact with experience. We find it pleasant, we want more of it. We're like hamsters on a wheel, reptiles in a bog. And then comes clinging. There's craving and then clinging. That's the next one after. So you can see how that just drives the wheel of samsara. So it kind of, this aspect of the Vedanas sheds a kind of a different light on the power of it. Because when we're talking about the skandhas, that's the sense of self. And here, it's the sense of grasping and how it just drives our attachment. They're related, but they're also distinct. So you could say, you know, this, that's why the second foundation is like, what's that? You sort of read the four foundations like, really? Pleasant, unpleasant, neutral? That's the second one? But you can see why it's so amazingly powerful, because it just drives all of our unconsciousness, all of our attachment. It's the glue that makes it happen. So let's go back to the second foundation itself. These kind of, what we've been talking about, gives us a better understanding of how important it is and why we might want to cultivate mindfulness of it. And he said it because we wouldn't notice. I swear we wouldn't notice. We would just drift on by, reacting away. So it's so, you know, that's why the Buddha is so amazing. The Buddha said, in the refrain where he's talking about this particular one, and he talks about how to practice, I'm reading now, from the Satipatthana Sutta, and he says, and how does one abide contemplating Vedanas as Vedanas? Here, when feeling a pleasant Vedana, one understands, I feel a pleasant Vedana. When feeling a painful Vedana, one understands, I feel a painful Vedana. When feeling a neither pleasant nor painful nor pleasant Vedana, one understands, I feel a neither pleasant nor painful nor pleasant Vedana. Or else, mindfulness that there is Vedana is simply established in one to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and mindfulness, and one abides independent, not clinging to anything in the world. And as many of you know that phrase, one abides independent, not clinging to anything in the world, that shows up 13 times in the refrain about every different aspect. But this is right at the root of it. And this is right at what he's talking about. So, you know, how do we practice with it? And what's really powerful about the second foundation, maybe more than the elders, I don't know, is how applicable it is on and off the cushion, which is exactly what everyone's been talking about. You know, and on the cushion, I mean, just think of the ways you get tugged when you're sitting by poignant memories, by longings or regrets, or your body hurts, planning for fun times, and how we get sucked into all this stuff. So to really look at the ways that it's pleasant or unpleasant can really be a way to slip the clutch and not get lost. It's really helpful. It's a great tool to not be sucked in, as opposed to just being mindfulness when you're spinning out on something. You know, to see that part of it really, really helps. Just the fact that it's pleasant or unpleasant, right there is often where you can just go, oh, and be present again. And even like, I don't know, compulsive planning. And I bet a lot of us do that. But then, you know, why are we doing that? What about we're planning our trip to Hawaii? And it's this whole intricate thing is we want to have the perfect experience, right? Or, you know, we're rehearsing the thing that we're going to say to the difficult person at work, which is trying to get it to stop being unpleasant. But all that planning is driven by pleasant and unpleasant and neutral. And, you know, as you become more aware, you start to realize that in our crazy consumer digital dense world we're in 2023, that's pleasant and unpleasant as just being pumped at you nonstop, all the time, every time you turn around, every time you turn on a device, wham. That's what's trying to get you to do pleasant, once in a while trying to get you to not vote for the other guy because of unpleasant, mostly pleasant. And it is crazy the way, you know, like you sit in a, even like sit in a restaurant, you're looking at the menu, the whole thing is artistically created to make you want to have a pleasant experience and sort of navigate what kind of a pleasant experience you're going to have. It's all about that. And then the wait person comes by and they said, oh, is it tasting good? I always think that's like a real sign. Oh, yeah. That's what they're talking about. The tasting good. And then, you know, when we're with people, that's the heart of the matter, person to person, people we love, you know, stuff that Susan's kind of working through with this big event and the people you love and how do you, what about when buttons get pushed and how unpleasant that can be and all that stuff and maybe we react and try to make the unpleasant stop. So maybe we say something we shouldn't say to get them to stop being that way or triggers some button and we punch back with our button. But if we can just recognize that as unpleasant, then we don't have to react. The Buddha said, or else mindfulness that there is Vedana is simply established to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and mindfulness, and one abides not clinging to anything in the world. So that's how we can find freedom, no matter how unpleasant or pleasant any experience is. Sit for a moment.